Hour number one is devoted to industry chatter, as it is every Thursday at 1 o'clock. And I'm pleased to have in the studio today Chris Miller, President of Government Facilities and Infrastructure for CH2M Hills. Nice to see you, Chris. Thank you for coming in.
Great to be here.
We were talking before the break, before we went on the air, that you're based in Denver, and so you come to D.C. a couple of times a year. So the question that everybody wants to know about Denver, especially this time of year, is it colder or warmer than it is in D.C.?
Right now it's warmer. Ironically, March is Denver's snowiest month. We've been known to have 3- and 4-foot snowstorms in March. But you ask me that question in 2 days because of the Rocky Mountains, and the answer would be different.
All right. Well, I hope that you didn't bring any of that with you, because we don't have nearly the winters that you have, but we're sick of them already. It's great to see you. Thank you for coming in today.
Wonderful.
Tell me about CH2M Hill and what you do and the services that you provide for agencies.
Oh, sure. CH2M Hill, we're a privately held firm of about 23,000 individuals. We focus on the built environment and infrastructure. We do things like master planning, consulting, engineering design, design build construction, operations and maintenance, and we do that on a global scale. And we also excel in program management in some of the world's most challenging infrastructure projects. We look at 6 markets. We focus on water and transportation, energy and the environment, facilities, which is what our specialty is in my business group, and also resources, the materials coming out of the earth to drive the planet itself. Looking at our focus, we look at all kinds of things from most of our business. A third of it is federal, a third of it is private, and a third of it is industrial and municipal and other types of city and state government. Mm-hmm. So we have a nice balance. It's helped us through this economic challenge we've been mm-hmm. in. We've worked around the globe, as I mentioned. We're currently in 83 countries, doing about 20,000 projects right now in those countries. We have worked in 149 countries around the world, and we've worked on all 7 continents. We've had some great experiences there. Being privately held is kind of unique in our industry. We're one of the largest privately held, where the employees kind of own the company. Mm-hmm. We dictate our success. If we capture a new sale or we deliver the project better, it's for the employees, not necessarily for Wall Street. We kind of control our destiny, which mm-hmm. is a nice thing to see. We're number one in what's called the ENR, which is the Engineering News Record. It's kind of our Bible of our industry of who's the best. And we're number one in program management. We're the number one environmental firm. We're third in government buildings and offices. We're fourth in water design. And we're fifth overall, the top 500 firms in design itself. And later on, I can detail some of the very cool projects that we've been privileged to do for our clients.
Well, that's actually what I'd like to have you do right now, is talk about some things that you're doing or have done recently for federal customers to give me an idea of the kinds of things that you do.
Absolutely. When I mentioned the elements of our portfolio, the planning and consulting is primarily for the Department of Defense.
Mm-hmm.
It's for agencies that focusing in the Middle East, also focusing here in the States. We do a tremendous amount of work with the Air Guard and the National Guard Bureau in terms of those elements of the force structure. Engineering design, we do it for the Corps of Engineers. We do it for the Air Force contract agencies, which the new acronyms are AFSCE and AFCESA, just call them contract agencies.
Mm-hmm.
We're trying to branch in more of the Department of State with the Embassy Works and the Overseas Building Office
mm-hmm.
In terms of design. And we're also doing more design for the Department of Energy, the NNSA, the National Nuclear Security Agency, more mm-hmm. of the weapons complex here in the United States. Design build, we focus on looking at the Corps of Engineers. We're trying to break into NAVFAC. We're working for the Coast Guard, for instance. We also do the 2 Air Force agencies, do a lot of work for them in both the U.S. and the Middle East.
Mm-hmm.
Most of that construction is green new construction, but a lot of it is sustainment, restoration, modernization. I have an older facility that has an energy intensity that's unacceptable. It mm-hmm. needs an upgrade from force protection. It needs an upgrade from an IT perspective, so we also delve in that world.
Mm-hmm.
The O&M side, probably our most proud project is we run the Air Force Academy there in Colorado Springs. If you look there, it's 4,400 cadets,
mm-hmm.
28 NCAA Division I teams set up and tear down. It's one of the few facilities in the country that actually can handle an Olympics if it had to.
Wow.
It has that type of tolerance, and we run that. And when President Obama comes already, or Vice President Joe Biden, we talk to them. And when the Corona comes out, all the Air Force generals, we set up and tear down for that. And that is a zero-fail environment, so it's a really proud
yeah.
project. Other O&M logistics we do for the National Science Foundation. For their Arctic program, we step up and get the scientists enabled to perform their experiments. And some of those experiments are amazing. You know, we're going back 4 million years with drilling to sediments. And if you look at an ice core and a drill core, you can do an analysis of the interstitial airspace and the soil and determine what the atmosphere was like 4 million years ago.
Wow.
And take a look at that and how much carbon was there and all the impact. So it's really fascinating work. And then our program management, probably our key job there, is the Korean base relocation. If you look at the Yongsong Garrison there in Seoul, we're moving them down about 70 kilometers south to Pyeongtaek. It's 44,000 troops, families, and civilians, brand new base, you know, 18 million cubic meters of landfill to build this thing up to get ready for it, 600 new facilities. And you have to do some tough move management there because it is a volatile zone. With the person up north who's a bit unstable, to be polite, I think, is it allows us to do all that. And we, in the line item, we measure our schedule there, master schedule is 53,000 plus line items that we manage the critical path to. So really complex. And outside of our federal work, some of our cool projects that your audience may connect with is the London Olympics and Paralympics. We do all, in a part of a partnership with CLM, we do all the program management for those activities, for all the infrastructure and the venues and the stadiums. And we're actually going to be done a year early. If you remember Athens and Beijing, they weren't quite done that early.
They were still working on, they were still pounding nails, it seemed like, when the athletes got there to start working out.
Exactly. So imagine a whole year to get it right. What an advantage that is for the UK, and they're going to be a very proud Olympics, the sustainable Olympics ever. It'll be the largest green space in Europe when we're done. The materials used to build are all recyclable as much as we could. The functionality of the stadium, some of them, the basketball arena will actually be taken down. It's temporary, so it won't be a thing there that, you know, the joke with the Brits was if they didn't invent the sport, they won't play it. And so basketball isn't as important to them.
They don't care about it anymore.
And so that one, and then the Panama Canal is kind of an interesting one. If you look at the post-Panamex type shipping, the certain size of ships can't get through there right now. So we're building a series of canals and other third channel and lock systems so very large ships can get through with significant larger draws. Imagine that does for the efficiency of global commerce. It knocks down the carbon footprint of having to steam all the way around South America. So really neat projects that we're trusted with around the globe to kind of, you know, must get done type work.
Yeah. Talk about some of the complexities of working. You mentioned some of the work that you're doing in the Middle East for DOD and for USAID before we went on the air. Talk about some of the logistics that are involved there or some of the requirements that are involved there that we might not think of, those of us that are used to thinking about putting up a building here in the United States.
Absolutely. You know, it starts and ends with safety. We inherit a very skilled workforce, but a workforce that's not been exposed to safety practices. They don't have hard hats. They've never had boots. Every day we have to look at an activity and tell them how to do it safely and really take nothing for granted. So you really want to keep that workforce safe. We record all the incidents and accidents that may happen with our subcontractors like their own employees because we need to care about them. And so you have a workforce that comes in skilled but not necessarily safe. The logistics challenges are huge. You have to send things through other countries and get them through the border. You have to do Buy America with some of those things, so it adds some complexities there. And then, in effect, you have local Afghan firms and maybe some Turkish firms, and you have to teach them how to deliver, and you have to be at the job site. It's very important to be there observing, making sure the quality is right, the health and safety is right, the construction is done properly. And it, all in effect is to turn it over to the government is as good a facility as they have back in the States with those same challenges.
Chris Miller is president of government facilities and infrastructure for CH2M Hill, my guest for the hour on Industry Chatter on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. It's In Depth with Francis Rose, and we'll continue in a moment.
The Pentagon and Beyond, brought to you by Arink.
How much money is the Pentagon spending on the war in Libya? Donna Casada from the AP writes, the coalition has fired at least 162 sea-launched Tomahawk missiles at $1 million to $1.5 million apiece, and dispatched and sent off B-2 stealth bombers, round trip from Missouri, to drop 2,000-pound bombs on Libyan sites. Total flying time, 25 hours. Cost for 1 hour, at least $10,000. I'm J.J. Green.
When you fly over the North Pole, do you ever think about how remote you are? Airink does, and that's why they have it covered. They're the only company in the world that provides high-frequency data links so that pilots can always communicate with someone on the ground. Airink ensures you're never alone at 35,000 feet. For more information and career opportunities, log on to arinc.com.
Listen to Fed Talk on Federal News Radio 1500 AM every Friday morning at 11 o'clock. Brought to you by the attorneys of Shaw, Bransford, and Roth. Fed Talk features live interviews with guests from the federal community sharing their insights on issues that affect you. Call in or email questions or comments to FedTalk at federalnewsradio.com. Fed Talk is sponsored by GEICO.
This week, host Deborah Roth will be joined by career coach Catherine Troutman of The Resume Place to discuss the current federal hiring outlook and how to land a federal job.
Tune in to The Federal Drive every weekday morning from 6 to 10 on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Hear news, perspective, and analysis from Tom Temin and Amy Morris. Tom and Amy will give you the information you need to help explain and navigate your world. Listen on the radio at Federal News Radio 1500 AM, morning 6 to 10, or go to federalnewsradio.com and click Listen Live. The Federal Drive is sponsored by Symantec Confidence in a Connected World.
The ComSatCom report, provided by Hughes.
Completing our mission requires that my unit maintain net-centric communications with our command at all times. Whether we are at base or out in the field, satellite is the best option to maintain communication in conflict zones, both mountainous and urban areas. But we are experiencing a bandwidth crisis.
The growing demand for intelligence, surveillance, and reconnaissance applications requires more efficient use of high-capacity bandwidth to maintain communications in theater. Hughes can provide the satellite networking and bandwidth you need, when you need it, and wherever your mission may take you. Hughes employs the latest commercial technologies to deploy secure, high-capacity networks, which are the most bandwidth-efficient in the world and stay within tight military budget constraints. To learn more about our technologies and contract vehicles, visit today's complete ComSatCom report on federalnewsradio.com or visit Hughes on the web at defense.hughes.com.
Hey there, I'm Christopher Dorabeck. Here's what we're working on for the Dorabeck Insider this afternoon. A lot of debate about what causes climate change, but no doubt that the oceans are getting warmer. That will have impacts on the U.S. Navy. How? Well, we'll talk to an expert. And what words should you never use in a proposal? We'll tell you about a technology that will go through your RFP responses and find those red flags. This afternoon, 3 to 7 on the Dorabeck Insider. It's right here on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com.
Thanks for listening to In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Industry chatter today with Chris Miller, President of Government Facilities and Infrastructure for CH2M Hill. We were talking before the break about some of the challenges that you deal with when you're doing a project in another country, but for the government and still working under federal government contracting requirements. Is it getting easier for you or harder for you to do business with the government, and what's pushing it whichever way it's going for you?
I think generally, in talking to my colleagues and my own gut feel, is it's getting a little harder. There's a tremendous regulatory oversight push from DCA and other agencies to check things, and there's much more scrutiny. It's causing us to have to incur costs to respond to that, and they're upping the game in terms of compliance and oversight. And it's unique because we were doing things right, but now the game has changed and it's a harder game. And so we're having to adjust to that. The second thing is this continuing resolution is a tough thing.
Mm-hmm.
It impacts a lot of parts of the business from, business of our energy services. We have buildings that have high energy intensity and we're trying to turn those down for the federal government. Well, the money to consult and think about the solutions tied up in the CR. A lot of the construction in Afghanistan we referenced earlier is tied up in the CR.
Mm-hmm.
So there's quite an impact, and I can appreciate the need to understand how much government we can afford and what the deficit reduction plan is, because that's crucial.
Mm-hmm.
But there are unintended consequences of just about anything we do, and,
yeah,
and that's what we're seeing from our side.
Mm-hmm. The issue with the CR is complex, too, because as time is consumed by continuing resolution for a fiscal year that's half over, the process that we would normally be following to try to hash out something for FY 2012 is being sucked up by that. What does that do for your planning, for your conceptualization, for trying to work with clients that, you know have needs, they know they have needs, but until the cash is actually allocated, it's hard to move forward?
Well, I think it comes down to, in terms of our planning, we plan like it's going to be solved. I think we temper our optimism a bit with reality and maybe take a bit off of what we think might happen. But, you know, for instance, one of our customers says, I have 70, 80 projects ready to go, and it's flowed up to the SecDef level. And in effect, he tells Congress that's the way, you know, we need to get something done here. We've got projects ready to go, jobs ready to be created, mostly stateside, just not necessarily overseas. And I think you have to temper your optimism, but you have to have faith in the system that will work itself out, or some nuance to it that allow the mission of the soldier not to be impacted in Afghanistan, or the ability to stand up the Afghan National Army or Afghan security forces, the facilities they need to take control of their own security. So that those are tough and, you know, unintended consequences we have to work through.
You talked about some of the regulatory challenges that are growing. Do you think they're growing? Are they growing maybe faster than they should? Are they growing more than they should? Or are they fair, just things that you're trying to deal with and becoming familiar in dealing with?
I think they're fair, but they're unknown. The rules in the game keeps changing a bit, and I think that's impacting industry's ability to respond. I think overall industry understands the ethics and the requirement and the specifications of what they need to do, but when the shell moves, it's tough to respond.
And so some certainty in that area would be helpful for you. How would you change the way that the agencies interact with you? Are you getting the level of collaboration early on, not just after the contract's awarded, but well before that, that you would like to see, and that the people like Dan Gordon would like to see when he goes out and talks about myth busting and so forth?
I think there is. It depends. It's agency specific. But a lot of times they reach out to industry to help frame what a solicitation should look like. And they seek it for their benefit to say, do I have enough offers to put this on the street to get enough competition, which is good. But they also ask, well, am I asking the right things, or what would you like to see so you can bid? And what I think that's crucial is, if you have these larger federal contracts with one contractor doing it, how do you open up competition and level the playing field so that everyone has a chance to succeed them? And I think they're doing a better job with that in terms of leveling the playing field. And then ideas come out, better innovations, because a lot of times we're talking 5, 10, 15-year contracts, and you get set in your ways. And you forget there may be – your blinders are on. There may not be a better way of doing things.
Yeah. What is driving that, do you think? What is pushing that? Is that just the fiscal reality that we're dealing with now? Or is it a conscious policy decision that's causing that? Or where do you think that's coming from?
I think it's a little bit of both. I think the fiscal reality, the place that I see it a lot that's bothersome, but I understand, they're going to, in the construction world, what's called firm fixed price lump sum, which is fine. We can do that. But the next element they're doing is what's called low price technically acceptable, where past performance or innovation don't really count. It's who's got the lowest bid. And I can understand that for certain facilities. But what that eliminates, if you're looking at a life cycle of a project and you can bring an innovation up front, which may cost $1 million more, but save $10 million over the life of that facility, the government and the taxpayer probably want that solution. But unfortunately, they're being backed into a low cost now with budget constraints, and it kind of ties their hands. And that's frustrating at times.
Chris Miller is president of government facilities and infrastructure at CH2M Hill, my guest on Industry Chatter on Federal News Radio 1500 AM.
Mauer. Hour, CNBC Business Radio. Stocks are higher. The Dow's up 70 points. The Nasdaq higher by 29. The Labor Department says new claims for unemployment insurance dropped 5,000 to 382,000 last week, marking the fourth decline in 5 weeks. The Commerce Department says companies trimmed orders for manufactured goods in February. This is suggesting businesses are limiting their spending. FedEx has ordered four more of Boeing's 777s. The order is worth more than $1 billion. FedEx now has 17 of the planes on order. Freighters are a large part of Boeing's airplane business. Mortgage rates are up slightly. Freddie Mac says the average rate on a 30-year fixed mortgage rose 4.81% from the 4.76% the previous week. And a recently released report says companies that operate nuclear plants in the U.S. are not telling the government about some equipment defects that could create safety risks. Chris Maurer, CNBC.
Time now for the final round. Mike has blue eyes, Jim has brown eyes. What does Joe have?
Bronchitis?
Correct.
Yes.
If X marks the spot,
Y folds the laundry.
Correct.
Woo!
How many TV episodes does Netflix let you watch instantly for only $8 a month?
As many as you want.
Correct.
I can't believe...
Watch unlimited episodes of your favorite TV shows and movies instantly through your game console or other devices, all for only $8 a month from Netflix. See terms of use.
I'm adding another crew. My business is building. My marketing is deluxe.
My boutique is setting new trends in fashion and sales. My marketing is deluxe.
I just opened my third fitness studio. My business is gaining strength. My marketing is deluxe.
Use deluxe online marketing tools to help your business grow. Deluxe for business.
Deluxe for my business.
For my business.
For my business.
Deluxe for business. Visit deluxe.com.
Please join the American Federation of Government Employees for its series, Inside Government, brought to you in part by Purchasing Power and Grantham University. The weekly program gives you the real story on what's happening inside federal agencies and the rights of federal employees. Hear the latest from nation's top lawmakers, celebrities, journalists, union leaders, and federal workers. Don't miss AFGE's Inside Government, Friday mornings at 10, right here on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
It's the Geico Gecko with a little hello to all you federal employees. Now, in government, there are people on all points of the political spectrum. But there is one thing that everyone agrees on. Saving money is good. Which brings me to the big news. GEICO now offers discounts to most federal employees GS7 or above. It don't matter if you're a Democrat or an aristocrat, left wing, right wing or a chicken wing. If you're a federal employee GS7 or above, you could be saving a lot of money on your car insurance by switching to GEICO. So no matter if you're blue or red or in my case green. If you're a federal employee, GS7 or above, contact GEICO and see how much you could save. Isn't that right, Mike?
Exactly right, my little green friend. Hey, folks, this is Mike Causey. And like the Gecko said, discounts are available for most federal employees, GS7, the equivalent, or above. Just call GEICO at 1-800-947-AUTO, go to geico.com, or visit your local GEICO office to see how much you could save.
Diary entry, August 15th. My joints ache. Today I can hardly move. I need some answers.
I need some answers. September 3rd. I'm tired all the time. What's going on?
June 8th. I woke up with a rash on my face. I want to know why.
For answers, ask your doctor the right question. Could I have lupus? For answers, for support, for hope, visit couldihavelupus.gov or call 1-800-994-9662. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services Office on Women's Health and the Ad Council.
It's a case involving banks, bombs, and blood brothers. And before it was all over, the U-30 bandit and his co-conspirator had robbed 8 banks in Massachusetts. All of the crimes were committed in under 30 seconds. I'm Molly Halpern of the FBI, and this is Gotcha. Special Agent Eric Toole says speed wasn't the bandit's only weapon.
He just said, give me all the money. I have a gun. This is a bomb.
A surveillance camera helped the FBI and its law enforcement partners catch a break in the case.
The camera caught an eyeball. One of the local detectives recognized the eye as being similar to someone. someone that he had dealt with many times.
That I belonged to Dimitri Long, who was arrested coming out of a bank with stolen money in hand. His getaway driver, who was his half-brother, Michael Cody, sped away, but was later caught trying to hide in a stranger's house. Long was sentenced to 20 years behind bars last month, and Cody was sentenced to 60 months. Thanks for listening to Gotcha, the FBI's closed case of the week.
Do you know someone who has done something outstanding in the field of human capital management? Nominate them for Federal News Radio's second annual Causey Awards. Together, we'll call attention to what may be a best practice in government. Anyone can be nominated, career, political, and contractors working in the HR field. The award is named after Mike Causey and his lifelong dedication to the reporting of management and federal pay and benefits issues. To nominate someone for the Causey Awards, go to federalnewsradio.com, search award.
We're back on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. It's In Depth with Francis Rose. My guest for the hour is Chris Miller, President of Government Facilities and Infrastructure for CH2M Hill. We're talking about the different kinds of contracts that you're seeing and the trends that you're seeing. And you mentioned the low-price, technically acceptable contract. And you're seeing a lot more of those, I would imagine, in the financial environment that we're in. But it strikes me that that's not necessarily, I understand the point. I understand we're trying to squeeze as much as we can out of the actual dollars, real dollars that we have today. But you mentioned, the kind of project where, yeah, it will cost $1 million more up front, but you wind up saving $10 million through life cycle costs. Are we getting too far away, do you think, from looking at life cycle costs and understanding the impact that they have down the road?
I think we are, and I think the budget situation is driving a lot of that. There is a means. We saw before in the firm fixed price, they had what was called best value. And some would argue low price technically acceptable is an element of best value, but it really pushes you to the lower right-hand side of the spreadsheet, who's the low number.
Mm-hmm.
And looking at a firm like ours, as I mentioned, from the planning to the design to the O&M, we have a different kind of a green life cycle mindset and view of these projects. And so you're almost discouraged from bringing innovation to the project if you want to win. If you don't come in with the minimum requirements they offer, I lose.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think ultimately we want to stay in that type of mindset and frame. And I think the budget constraint will exacerbate that over the next few years.
Is there a way that you can demonstrate that ROI, though, to in the process? Or is it so hard and fast that if you're not at the low number with the very bare minimum requirements, you're out?
Well, the low price, you are. Where we demonstrate the value is when we do our engineering design work, we can then show the ROI.
Mm-hmm.
And our clients put us under pressure. When we come in with a design that has the aesthetics they need, the security they need, the IT they need, but we are under the gun to hold to come in at what the construction costs would be, and they want us to be within 1% so they can efficiently use their money. So I think it's going to be tough in the LPTA to show innovation. You have to come up with a price-to-win strategy.
Is the changing the kinds of contracts and going back more toward a best value model the only thing that can be done? Or are there other vehicles, other tricks that you think the agencies could use?
I think they should go back there because it still gives them the option to go with the low price if they don't necessarily agree with the trade-off. But
mm-hmm.
as soon as you put LPTA in there, you put yourself in a box to pick the low number because everyone's qualified, everyone's past performance is acceptable.
Mm-hmm.
And it really boxes you in. But I would say if they could migrate back to best value, and if the project warrants the low price and mm-hmm. there isn't much innovation, by all means, tag that winner. But I think you're really closing your mindset. You're not having a kind of an open mind in terms of being able to bring innovation to a project.
Give me some examples of where you think an LPTA approach in your particular field is fine and works fine, and then an example of something where you think a best value approach would be better for the customer.
Okay. And when I think about, you know, troops and barracks or dormitories where they sleep, it's pretty predictable.
Mm-hmm.
There's a very finite specification of, you know, the space for each soldier, airman, or marine. And I think that warrants, you know, itself to where you could do LPTA. Who does that predictable construction best? But let's take this to a vehicle maintenance facility or some type of innovation. Because if you notice, the DOD weapons platforms are getting a little smaller,
mm-hmm.
a little bit more technically innovative. So the facility footprint's going to shrink too.
Mm-hmm.
So in looking at that, what is the best energy life cycle cost of a facility? Should that be an evaluation criteria? there are LEED certificate, leading engineering and environmental design, which is ranges from silver, gold, platinum. That can be in there, and you can mandate that requirement. But really, you want to bring the, what does GE do? What does Alcoa do? Some of these terrific industrial companies that we have, and we still do manufacture a lot of things, as you well know. And so how can we bring those best practices in and show the life cycle cost? So I think anytime you're in the operational, the maintenance footprint, it gives you a chance to bring innovation in or the training platform if you have a simulator or other type activity.
How have you seen, other than the kinds of contracting vehicles, how have you seen the business of doing business with the government change over the last maybe year to 3 years?
Change in last year, in our space, we have seen almost complete abandonment of the cost reimbursement vehicle, moving to fixed price. We have seen accelerated payments. I think there are means and methods for the government to actually validate the contractor costs and then pay them more quickly, which I think is a positive. What we also see is agencies that are overworked from the contractual people. They have an acquisition staff that is kind of relatively overworked. And then you dump programs like ARA and other things into the mix, and it just adds to that base workload, and they struggle to get some of their base mission done. So I think the government is moving out and trying to get more professional acquisition folks. I think they're moving out before the DCA. Like I said, it's not what they're regulating. It's you don't know what they're going to regulate is the challenge, and I think that'll resolve itself over time. So I think those are the main trends we're seeing from the government side.
Now, there some folks in your position at other companies have said part of the reason that it doesn't bother them as much that the low price technically acceptable mode is the way to go is because that's pretty easy for the acquisition teams to evaluate. The apples to oranges comparison, my solution may or may not be equally or same price as yours, but the trying to evaluate best value contracts is not nearly as easy as just checking a bunch of requirements and then looking at the lower right corner of the spreadsheet, as you said. Are the agencies getting better at doing that, do you think, in the cases where they're still using best value?
I think they want to do that, but the other complication they face is, within recent times, the ability to protest not just an IDIQ award, but an individual task order down to the $5 million has added to their risk of not going to the lower right-hand side. You can bring about, the government can write up a great justification that, hey, this makes sense life cycle, and the guy that or gal that was low bid will file a protest saying, you should have picked me. You did not adequately approve a best value of the firm that showed those things. So I think besides the staffing, they have a much more, it's not litigious, but a protest-laden environment that they have to overcome. So I think your point's right on. There is more risk with best value, but how do you offset that with the life cycle savings versus the delays in procurement associated with the protest activity?
Now, if you can't answer this question, don't feel bad because nobody else has been able to either, but I'll give it a shot. What do we do with the protest process? How do we make it maybe not riskier for companies to protest, but how at least cut down on some of the traffic there to prevent some of the things that we're talking about? Any thoughts on that?
Boy, that's a great question.
Because I understand we want to be fair to both the protesting company and the company who's being protested. And a number of the remedies that have been suggested turn out to be unfair to one side or the other.
I don't know if you can, because a lot of times you are seeing small business interests mixed with large business interests, and I think you have to protect the small guy. What I think one thing that bothers me is you go through a protest, the agency takes corrective action, and it looks reasonable, and they get the same result. Well, there's no disincentive for that same firm to keep kicking that protest can down the road and get it to a federal judge and try to get a ruling there. So I think if you look at it, when do you stop? When has the agency defended its position long enough, and when should you probably stop the protests? Because they did get their day in court, and if the GAO comes in and says it's clean, you probably ought to be in a position to stop the protests, but the chain can go on to the federal circuit, district court, whatever it happens to be, and it never ends.
Yeah. Chris Miller's my guest. He's president of Government Facilities and Infrastructure for CH2M Hill. Here for the full hour on Industry Chatter on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
If you're a woman and you're sick and tired of watching your hair get thinner and thinner, we're about to challenge everything you think you know about hair loss. Because we're going to send you a risk-free trial of a product with an FDA-approved ingredient, clinically proven to help stop women's hair loss and regrow hair. It's called Keranique. Find out how you can try it risk-free by calling 1-800-600-0209 in the next 10 minutes. You're going to be amazed by what you see, because Keranique is formulated especially for women to help repair hair follicles, prevent premature hair loss, and regrow thicker, fuller hair. And it's sulfate-free, which means it's safe for color-treated hair. Ladies, it's finally your turn to be free from embarrassing hair loss. Call 1-800-600-0209 in the next 10 minutes and try Keranique before you buy it. But hurry, supplies are extremely limited. For your risk-free trial, call 1-800-600-0209. That number again is 1-800-600-0209.
Here's what you can do to help stop the flu. Cough or sneeze into your sleeve, not your hands. Wash your hands often with soap and water or alcohol-based hand sanitizers. You should avoid touching your eyes, nose, or mouth. Germs spread that way. Stay home if you're sick and get a seasonal flu shot. For more on flu prevention and seasonal flu shot locations offered by Adventist Healthcare, go to HelpStopTheFlu.com. That's HelpStopTheFlu.com.
In partnership with WTOP Radio, a Bonneville station, together making a difference in Washington.
Newsmakers on In Depth with Francis Rose, weekday afternoons 1 to 3.
General John Jumper was Air Force Chief of Staff from 2001 to 2005.
You've seen Secretary Gates advocate for more resources to the State Department and other agencies to be able to form sort of deployable forces to deal with these transitions when the time is right. And I think he's done a lot to improve that.
Hear the entire interview online, federalnewsradio.com/in-depth.
It is In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Talking to Chris Miller, President of Government Facilities and Infrastructure for CH2M Hill. And something we were just talking about a little bit off the air, the compression's maybe not fair, but over the next several years it will be a compression of the contracting market just because the government will be spending less. How is that changing the way that you do business? How is that changing the way that you bid on projects or the kinds of things that you bid on or anything like that?
I think in the marketplace, it's forcing us to look at what parts of our portfolio may be vulnerable to that mashdown, so to speak. Who are new competitors coming in? I think it makes us look at what parts of the portfolio do we need to expand upon or add to? I.e., are we going to be an IT company? Probably not. But there are other elements of our portfolio that we can move forward and partner. Because as I mentioned, if you can deliver a project as complex as the Olympics or Panama Canal, I'm certain we can move in and help a large weapons program integrator that may be facing budget constraints and help them. Because if you look at those two, those are certain end date mega infrastructure programs with anywhere from $5 to $12 billion of spend in construction. And they have to be done on time. Mm-hmm. So what value can we add to that large spend and move up the chain to be an enabler of these large firms to help them be successful? And so we're looking at that too.
Mm-hmm. How do you expect, other than the 800-pound financial gorilla that's in the room, how do you expect not necessarily your business, but just doing business with the government to change in the next 3 to 5 years?
I think it will change. There will be fewer opportunities. We also see a trend in my space of mergers and acquisitions, and I think that will spill over even more into the other federal spaces where, do I want to compete against these guys or do we collaborate and come up with a hold position in the market while the funding is coming down? And so I think you'll have a challenge there. In terms of our bidding work, it will not lower what we expect in terms of our financial performance, but it could squeeze a little bit. In our continental, we're in what I call a hyper-competitive market. And I look at that from my whole portfolio, and I ask the question, do I want to go down to that level of business performance to bid that work when I can go back to my design engineering, my O&M? I'm very diversified. But if I'm a general contractor in the southeast part of the U.S., that's what I do. So I have to go down to the market level just to keep the lights on. Mm-hmm. I can't all of a sudden become an O&M or a design firm.
Right.
So the portfolio gives us some flexibility, but I think with the federal side, you'll see fewer bigger contracts for shorter terms of period, and I think you'll see, quite frankly, things like if soon as big things like weapons platforms start to be canceled more and more, it has a trickle-down effect from facilities to infrastructure to IT to classified ops, whatever it happens to be.
Mm-hmm. Do things like closure of GIFCOM or the shifting of priorities there, does something on that scope affect a company like yours?
It doesn't, because actually we're looking at that space to potentially grow into it. But we are not necessarily a staff augmentation firm like some of the larger management consulting firms. Mm-hmm. And it really had to impact them. I don't have a sense of their business. But we don't see that. But what that does is it may catalyze their entry into our market space in terms of having to replace that revenue.
Mm-hmm. The M&A market has been, it seems to me, it's been a lot more active over the last year or 18 months than it has been in the previous maybe 5 to 10 years. And there are a number of reasons for that we'll explore next week on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. We'll talk about mergers and acquisitions and the way that they impact companies all up and down the chain. As you sit and watch some of these mergers and acquisitions take place, what goes through your mind when somebody does something that maybe is a competitor of yours or that you work in cooperation with or on projects from time to time or whatever?
And I see, it's a good question, because when I see the heavy acquisitors and very few mergers, it is pure acquisition out there, little M, big A. I try to wonder, how do you know who you are?
Mm-hmm.
When you're acquiring 3 or 4 or 5 firms a year, what's your culture? How do you talk to your customers? How do they have that same experience? And that would be very difficult. I've even talked to competitors in our space who have now come to join our company, and they weren't really focused on business development in terms of new business. They were focused on who do I buy this year to grow my business development.
Mm-hmm.
And that would be a very odd thing to focus on that.
What do you think that says about the federal market in particular, but just the general market as a whole, when that's the way that some companies feel that, I mean, they obviously feel that's the best way they have based on the assets mm-hmm. that they have to be able to grow the bottom line?
I think it comes down to that that's you have to have the right culture to do that, but the government in some instances almost forces their hand into that strategy, because as I tell my folks, you don't get to bring a better gun to the gunfight. You got to have more bullets
mm-hmm.
when you're battling for government business.
Yeah.
And in doing that, it's tough to overcome a big acquisitor who's putting more bullets in the chamber than you are based on that activity.
Mm-hmm.
And the government doesn't necessarily look at the how you're going to do things. They tend to look at what they turn around, look at what your past performance is, and if you have better and more of that
mm-hmm.
Price set aside, it,
right.
it tends to strengthen your hand. So it kind of forces a strategy of acquisitions to meet that.
Mm-hmm. Chris Miller is my guest for the hour on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. He's president of government facilities and infrastructure for CH2M Hill, and we'll wrap up our conversation in a moment.
Sleep and colon cancer. From the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, I'm Ira Dreyfuss with HHS HealthBeat. Getting enough sleep can do a lot of good for people, and one study now indicates this might include a lower risk of colon cancer. At University Hospital's Case Medical Center in Cleveland, researcher Dr. Lee saw this in data on more than 1,200 colonoscopy patients who were asked before the screening test how much sleep they got. Lee found that patients whose colonoscopies showed signs of early colon cancer tended to get less than 6 hours of sleep a night. Lee says the study is another sign of the importance of sleep.
That's one-third of daily life and has been associated with a lot of things, diabetes, obesity. Now we're adding a precursor of colon cancer.
The study in the journal Cancer was supported by the National Institutes of Health. Learn more at hhs.gov. HHS HealthBeat is a production of the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services. I'm Ira Dreyfuss.
The FedCloud blog on federalnewsradio.com takes a look at the issues surrounding cloud computing through the eyes of those who are using it every day. We'll share with you the challenges, opportunities, and lessons learned from some of the top minds in the world of federal IT. Collaborate with others and help shape the discussion on cloud computing at the FedCloud blog on federalnewsradio.com or follow the FedCloud blog on Twitter. The FedCloud blog is sponsored by Cisco and Intel.
Please join Jim Fleisig March 29th at 12 noon for his monthly series, The Federal Executive Forum. This month's program will discuss the issues of telework and continuity of operation planning. The panel includes government leaders from GSA, DISA, and the State Department. Don't miss The Federal Executive Forum on Tuesday, March 29th at 12 noon, right here on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, and online at federalnewsradio.com.
Sponsored by LifeSize and Riverbed Technology.
Become an extraordinary leader through the Key Executive Leadership Masters of Public Administration program at American University. Taught by faculty at the top-ranked School of Public Affairs, the Key MPA program is designed for working professionals and offers weekend classes to fit your schedule. Learn more at an information session on April 6th. To RSVP, visit spa.american.edu/key.
Last April, 256 senior federal managers went missing. Are you next? The most successful managers know to never pass up an opportunity to learn. Join them this year to discover how to maximize your agency's forward momentum at the Federal Senior Management Conference at the Hyatt Regency Chesapeake Bay in Cambridge, Maryland, this April 10th through 13th. The Federal Senior Management Conference is the preeminent conference for senior federal managers, presented for government by government advisors, with registration open only to government employees. Register now at fedsmc.com or call 202-237-0300.
You're listening to In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Chris Miller is the President of Government Facilities and Infrastructure for CH2M Hill and my guest on Industry Chatter today. One of the things that we haven't talked a lot about yet, we've touched on a little bit with the acquisition workforce, but is talent acquisition. And you have the same challenges that I imagine a lot of companies have, and that is the economy is not so hot, but for companies that are specialized like you are, with a need for people who are very highly skilled in particular areas, it's really an employee's market out there, isn't it, right now?
It is, and we struggle with our talent because talent is about technical ability and it's also the right cultural fit. I mean, if you bring in the world's greatest scientist or engineer and they're a disruptive force, mm-hmm. you've done no good to anyone, your clients or your company. But talent shortage, you look at that, a top 10 list, it's in the upper tier of what we face mm-hmm. in terms of even in an economic headwind. We were mentioning the U.S. is currently 27th in the world in producing engineering and scientists. And that impacts my company. It impacts the big IT and the weapons platform. It impacts the government. Mm-hmm. And where are we going to get the engineering science talent to move forward? If you look at the engineering stats, the U.S. produces about 90,000 engineers a year. India produces about twice that much, and China's well over 300,000 engineers a year.
Mm-hmm.
So if you look at that over a decade, that's a staggering talent gap that we have to overcome. And I think that faces all elements of our society, regardless of what you're doing.
Yeah, there's some areas where cybersecurity is one of them, where the agencies and the vendors are fighting over the same talent, essentially. And you see a shuttle back and forth between the public sector and the private sector that really transcends the whole insourcing or outsourcing debate. In a lot of cases, it's the employees themselves that are determining who goes what based on what they want to do. Is that similar in your field too?
We've seen insourcing come out and we've responded to it where they've taken away slots, and that's fine. It's interesting that they, in effect, recruit our talent right out from under us. We're kind of their HR arm,
yeah.
And they pick us, and so be it. Ultimately, the customer gets satisfied, but insourcing is a big issue, but in terms of insourcing, you can't insource what you don't have. If mm-hmm. industry doesn't have it or you don't have it in-house, it's a great idea,
yeah.
But it doesn't give much fruition to getting the mission done.
From your perspective, what's the key to trying to grow that talent? Is there something that the agency should be doing? Is there something that you and the community, contracting community in general, can or should be doing, or how does that happen? Who do we count on to try to feed that pipeline?
I think it's both of us. Our company, I go out and I talk to middle school students, and I tell them, if they want to be engineers and scientists, what do they need to do right now? What will they need to do them in high school? What will they need to do in college? And try to get them engaged and show them You get to do world-changing projects like Panama Canal and London Olympics and other things that we do around the globe and make it interesting mm-hmm. because we have a society that devalues or takes for granted a lot of things we do. If bridges had the same failure rate as airline, industry, a bridge would be collapsing every day in the U.S. Mm-hmm. And that's untenable, but you take it for granted that mm-hmm. the engineering's in place, and when it does happen, it's shocking.
Yeah.
So I think society needs to invest in the schools. The schools are facing extraordinary deficit problems. And so why couldn't our company adopt a school?
Mm-hmm.
Or why couldn't we promote engineers? And we do this, and we do things like Engineers Without Borders, Water for People. We try to really revolutionize and bring forward in the mind's eye that engineering and science are a great place to be for the student.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we need to take more ownership of that. If not, we're going to be finding a workforce that's not ready for us when we need them 10 to 12 years from now.
Yeah. If you and I sit down and have this conversation 2 years from now, 3 years from now, and I hope it's not that long. I appreciate having you here today. But if we have that conversation, where would you like to see your company, and where do you think working with the government will be at that point?
I think I'm almost guaranteed that our culture will be there. If you look at us, we've been a Fortune 100 best places to work four or five out of the last 8 years.
Mm-hmm.
We received the Catalyst Award, which shows measurable results and a track record of getting women into key positions. Women are as talented as anyone in our organization. Sometimes there are unknown blocks, and we've eliminated those, which is really refreshing, encouraging, and kind of very thoughtful on our part. We try to move forward, and we've been recognized by the Ethisphere Institute as one of the world's most ethical companies 3 years in a row. So I think I want to come back here, and those cultural things are even built upon from here. But the next thing, I think we are going to have to move our cheese a little bit in the federal space as this decline comes down. We're going to keep parts of portfolio. We may look at moving out of parts of portfolio and then adding new things. And mm-hmm. we're looking at transforming ourselves.
I really appreciate having you here today. There's a lot more I'd like to cover, and we're out of time, so we'll have to get you to do that. And hopefully it won't be that 2 or 3 year window. Chris Miller is President of Government Facilities and Infrastructure for CH2M Hill. Thanks for being here today.
Been my absolute pleasure. Great experience.